Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone out there. Sherry, are you there?
Yes, how are you? I was wondering if we were going to be on. There was no intro.
No, there's some technical problems. There's something wrong with the website. It's not. I tried to play it, and it's doing weird stuff with you, too. So hopefully none of these issues will persist or get too weird. But anyway, we can live without an intro. Hopefully if it suddenly plays, it's not because I clicked it. There's some weirdness going on. But anyway, welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, here with Sherry Pang, as always. Sherry, how was your week?
Good. Very, very good. How was your week, Jason?
It was pretty good. Did you take in the Super Bowl?
No. I'm not into that kind of stuff. How about you?
I'm not either.
I really, really, no. I can find better things to do than sit and watch Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm not into it at all. But no, my week was pretty good. I did see a bit of shocking news. Kind of a big name in the world of cryptozoology passed away. He had been sick for a while. I don't know. He's been a guest on the show before, a guy by the name of J.C. Johnson. So I was kind of surprised to hear that unfortunate news. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. I hear he's very, very well known and a colleague of David Weatherly and Lon Strickler. So yes, it's just unfortunate that he passed. He had some difficulty, especially towards the end, and I never got a chance to know the guy, but yes, our thoughts and prayers are definitely with him and his family and also the paranormal family. I know he will be greatly, greatly missed. So quickly, I want to go and give a big shout out to our regular guest, very well known, veteran, international, a lot of media coverage with this guy, Barry Gott. He has formed his own radio show.
There's some really weird stuff going on. I apologize. Like I said, with the control panel getting all wonky. So hold on there, Sherry. I can't stop it. It's not letting me. This never happened before.
You are about to enter into the world.
Okay. Sherry, are you there?
Paranormal investigator
and
big conspiracy theorist. He's well known in his own right and his 40 years of experience and research. But anyway, he's getting his own show called Into the Fire with his sidekick, Maria. Maria's been on our show a couple times, and anybody want to listen to them every Tuesday at 6:00 p.m. Pacific time. That will be 8 p.m. their time. Go ahead and listen to them, and just they're another off branch of what we are. They're way off the beaten path. But anyway, the 27th, I will be their guest. Barry had asked me if I would like to be a guest on their show, and I said, yay! So yes, I'm excited. So yes, go ahead and check them out, and just support them. Tonight's show will be a new, young, and very, very, just a very kind soul. His name is Austin Shipley. He is, what he's going to do is will introduce us to the world of Alexandrian witchcraft and magic to dispel myths of the culture and the stigma that it causes. With a lot of people, I think there's a lot of people that are like, oh, my gosh, butch, don't get away from me, and, that kind of thing. And so he's going to be on, and he's going to educate the listeners about witchcraft and being a witch. So it's just another take of Paranormal Horizons. So we're going to bring him on.
I'm having some, major glitches over here. So hopefully this all works. Yeah,
okay.
I don't even know if we're like even broadcasting right now. I think according to this we are, but there's some really weird, maybe even paranormal stuff happening. So if
it happens, if you know how that has it has happened with us.
I've never seen this before. It's like it's just really strange. So we're gonna go ahead and try, and hopefully this is all working okay. But yeah, so we'll go ahead and bring them on.
Hey, Austin.
Hello there. Hello
there.
Hey,
okay? So we're Jason. We're on air, live on air, right?
Yeah, it's just
everything's fine.
Everything's bugging out. Everything seems to be working, but it's still weird on my end on the dashboard. But let's just roll with it.
You know, this really could be my fault. I have really bad luck when it comes to phone calls. Whenever I pick up the phone, strange things start going on. So if it's my fault, I really apologize, but hopefully we can get through it anyways.
We've seen this before where, like, we'll talk to a demonologist and they'll say, hey, well, weird stuff always tends to happen, and so weird stuff will happen. I've never seen it act like this before, but it appears to be working. So hopefully it won't get too funky. But how are you? And thanks for coming on. Looking forward to hearing a little bit about witchcraft. It's something I personally don't know much about.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys for having me on. It seems like a really fascinating show. And I saw you guys had Andrea Perrin on a little bit ago. And she's really interesting, someone who's firsthand experienced a lot of paranormal things that people only hear about. She's a really fascinating author. So it's cool that you guys had her on, and it's an honor to be on.
That's
great.
Oh,
thank you. It's
wonderful. Hey, so we're going to talk about people who don't know what witches are or witchcraft, you can explain what is it and what do people do, and, you know, why people, they shy away and get scared and things like that. You know, you can put a bright light to it. So go ahead. You're on the floor.
All right. Sounds awesome. Most people have this idea of witches and witchcraft that either it's something from a fantasy movie, right, where someone waves a wand and sparks shoot out of the wand and all of a sudden magical things can transform. We've seen that in the classic Disney movies. We've seen figures like Maleficent and even the good fairies in that movie where they cause things to happen. And all of these things are, of course, glamorized. Things from Harry Potter, media, folk tales, they're all glamorized. But the main thing that all of them say about witches is that they are a type of person who has certain abilities that are slightly more than the average person has. Special knowledge, special ability to use a certain power and make things happen. And this is kind of a common core throughout all the mythologies. And when you have someone who kind of straddles the line between the regular world and the spiritual world and who can cause change, often that really scares people. They think, what kind of bad things could you do with this? What kind of evil things, what kind of harm could you cause? But that's really not the main thing that people should be focusing on. Every time someone in this world gets power, typically it's to help themselves and to help the people around them. And that's mainly the job of the witch. So when I became a witch, I was initiated as a priest, and the title was bestowed upon me, priest and witch. And the idea of a priest is that you help yourself and the people around you spiritually or in mundane life. So like a Catholic priest will help you with spiritual cleansing, spiritual heightening, give you the spiritual healing and experiences you need. But they can also help you and give you advice in your regular life. This is what witches do. This is our job, to help ourselves, to help our family members, and to help the people that come to us make their life better, make the world better. So we're kind of spokespersons.
So it's not like, yeah, and it's people, it's like you're in spells and wishing ill upon people or, you know, black mm-hmm. magic. People really don't understand, what you do. You're actually a service to mankind, correct?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, just like any other priest or priestess or spiritual person, that's our goal. We're no different than all these other people who try to make the world better through spirituality.
So it seems like with all the movies that are out there, like The Craft and stuff like that, I can totally see how there'd be a negative connotation to witchcraft. And it's, mm-hmm. I would never play with it. I mean, is there a danger to it? Can somebody like get into whatever type of witchcraft there is out there and create problems for themselves or others by bringing in maybe negative energies? Is there any element of risk to it?
100% there is risk. But from my experience, I've talked to a lot more psychics and mediums that have had spiritual problems and basically demons knocking on their door than witches. It's actually very rare for a witch to have these problems compared to other spiritualities because a lot of our training and a lot of our study and practice is to control energies and make sure that they don't get out of hand. So I find that it's a lot safer, actually, than a lot of other spiritual practices. And also, when you're initiated into a community of witches, you have so many people around you who can help you. So it's actually a really safe thing if you do it right. Every once in a while, someone will get hurt, but it's not that dangerous.
So it's probably not a good idea to get on Amazon and buy a bunch of witchcraft books and just start dabbling in it. They should probably find other people out there that with experience. You know, I imagine a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
They go out there and like, ooh, I want to be a witch. It looks cool in the movie. Here, let me get my Amazon account and I'll do this and that and get this and start performing all these rituals. And next thing you know, a demon pops out of the ground.
That's 90% of it. But what typically happens with those people is a demon doesn't pop out of the ground. A demon doesn't show up at the foot of their bed. What usually happens is absolutely nothing because they're just making it a hobby. So they put in very little energy and very little energy comes back. Do you understand?
Yeah, the power of intention. I mean, if you put the more energy you put into something, in anything in life, the more reward. Mm-hmm. So I can see what you're saying, where if it's just kind of a hobby, oh, I'm going to do this for 20 minutes, probably wouldn't be able to expect, you know, magnificent results.
No, usually no good results and no bad results either. but furthermore, aside from the results, I mean, there is a little bit of danger, as there is in all sorts of spiritual exploration. Sometimes good things happen, sometimes bad things happen if you're a bit of a dabbler. But the main thing about witchcraft that surprises most people is that we're actually very in love with our gods, very in love with our priesthood, very in love with the community around us. The whole focus of our religion is to help the world, to make it better. And if you look back at the oldest priesthoods throughout all of the history of humanity, the oldest priesthoods were trying to make their hunting more successful, their crops grow taller and more fertile. They were trying to help the women produce babies so that they could have happy families. And it's never changed. That's our main goal. And we do this alongside our gods. We have a god and a goddess. Sometimes said that witches worship the goddess or Wiccans worship the goddess. In fact, we have a god and a goddess, and they're both symbols of fertility and power, basically. They teach us the mysteries of what it is to be a human on this earth and how we can be the best human that we can. It's like looking up to any type of godly figure and trying to see yourself in that and trying to work yourself up to that high aspiration. So if you meet witches, often they seem scary from a distance, but once you actually meet them, you see that they're very earnest spiritual people.
I'm still having technical problems here. I'm trying to work out. So now with the what types of witchcraft are there? Are there different, like, what's the school of witchcraft that you that you perform? And are there other ones? Are some better than others, or some more dangerous than others? I know there's like Wicca, which is like a big thing. And then I know, like, there's the Golden Dawn, and Aleister Crowley was doing a bunch of stuff. But I don't know a lot about it, so I was hoping you can kind of educate me on the different schools of witchcraft. I guess that's a word I'm looking for.
This one could be a bit controversial. Well, I typically look at, I mean, there's so many different paths you can choose. I mean, even with Christianity, there's so many different paths you can choose, and you can say, oh, they're all equal. But then what happens when you get a Christian cult that's super manipulative? Or what happens when you get a church that is against the social morals of the time and they are holding their congregation back from advancing in society? There's a lot of different types of witchcraft that have sprung up because, as you said, there's a lot of people who want to be witches. And the figure of the witch is a bit glamorized. It would be controversial for me to say that there was one that was better, but all I can say is I chose Alexandrian craft for a reason. The people that I met who were involved with Alexandrian craft were some of the kindest, most generous, and also the most intelligent people that I've met in the spiritual world. And so I just really aligned with them. And that was the big thing that made me say, okay, if these people have happy lives and they're fulfilled and they know how to make their life better, then that shows that they have true magical power behind them. And I went that way. And all these other different types of witchcraft, either they get results or they don't. And that's all you can basically sum it up to.
I have a question.
That's a big controversial to say.
Whether we're Christians, we're witches, we're Taoists, you know, it can go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you, is it for you a way of life? Do you say, okay, I'm a Christian, you know, I go to church and this and that. Is this something that you or people that in your sect, do they tell people that they're a witch and they try and explain these things to people, or do they keep it quiet and until they feel comfortable, they'll come out and say, you know, my belief system may be a little bit different than yours, and I just want to tell you that I'm a witch. I'm a priest, and I believe in the natural order of nature and this and that. So how do you approach, or how does your group approach that to people that don't know about this?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the main morals of our craft is upholding the highest truth. And the highest truth means that you make a promise to everyone involved that you will respect them, that you won't put them in danger, that you'll stand up for them, that you'll protect, help, and defend them. So if you look at the whole history of witchcraft, there have been so many time periods where if you were persecuted as a witch, you would be killed. And that's, it may seem like a relic of the distant past, which is being killed, so you can never reveal one who doesn't want to be revealed. But in truth, there still are all of these institutions that can ruin your life just like that if they decide to hold something against you that they want to misrepresent. There have been cases of women losing their children in the modern age because people said they were interested in occult activities, and that must mean that they're unsuitable to raise a child. There have been threats and harassment because people have found out that someone is a witch in a small town. So one of our things is that if you choose to be private about your involvement in the craft, absolutely no one can reveal that secret to anyone. That's one of our strongest oaths because it's the utmost truth to make that promise to someone. And whatever it takes to defend that utmost truth is what you need to do. But then there are other people who say, all right, I'm the target. Address me with all of your criticisms. Throw rotten fruit at me. Throw tomatoes at me, whatever you want. And I'll honestly sit here and tell you about our craft. And those people are like a little light in the distance. Those that align with it will go towards them, and they'll ask more questions, and they'll either accept it and think it's a beautiful thing, or maybe they'll reject it, or maybe they'll decide, this is what I've been searching for my whole life. This is what I want to do. I want to be a priest or a priestess of witchcraft. And so those lights are important, but it's also important, those people that are hidden in the shadows that can uphold the beautiful traditions of keeping the utmost truth and keeping people secret and respecting your fellow initiates so much that you'll keep them secret. So there's people on both ends of the spectrum, and both are really important.
So we do have a question from a listener online. He wanted to know more specifically about the Alexandrian witchcraft, like what exactly it is, the history and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Of course. So in the mid-20th century, Gerald Gardner came out and he said, witches are still around and here we are. And if you want to learn more, you can write to me and meet me and I'll tell you about it. And because he was the first to come public and say that and start publishing books, tons of people started getting interested in witchcraft. And they were like, what is the light behind this hidden cult? What is the light that they're hiding in their circle? And it just sparked like a wildfire. It was just the perfect time for it to happen. And then this man, Alex Sanders, came along. He got initiated. He formed his own coven. And he was also one of those public representatives. But him, he just had this like charisma about him that people just wanted to listen to him and ask more. And so throughout the 60s and 70s, more and more people came to the coven. And it became sometimes where they would just have people just filling their house that wanted to practice the rites of witchcraft. They had just so many people. And so what came out of Alexander's coven was Alexandrian witchcraft. And his wife at the time was the high priestess of the coven, Maxine Sanders. And together they just refined these rites after years and years of working every single day. They just refined and put their wisdom into their craft, and that's what we have today, Alexandrian witchcraft. So it's a religion and it's a priesthood, and to be a part of it, you have to find a coven, get to know them, and they have to initiate you, and you have to go through this lengthy initiation ritual. It's supposed to be scary, it's supposed to be thrilling, it's supposed to be beautiful. And once you come out of that initiation, it's like you're a different person. You have a power bestowed upon you, and you have a connection to these very old gods. And we practice rites in a very ritualistic way, but we're also occultists and magicians. So we look at the old grimoire traditions, and we look at anything that really works, like the ancient Egyptian magic, ancient Greek and Roman magic. And we incorporate all these things creatively to make a dynamic and living tradition of magic. There's nothing like it. It's just thrilling. It's always, it always has this creative spark about it. So you read online, you read like Wikipedia articles, this is what Alexandrian witchcraft is. Pretty much all of it is wrong in one way or another, because it's a living tradition. We're not trying to like write down, this is what we'll do, this is what we'll do tomorrow, this is exactly what we are. It's alive and it's breathing. So it's really just thrilling to be a part of. You're a part of a society that looks at witchcraft and sees beauty in it. So that's basically what it is. It's a bit hard to explain.
Well, I was kind of curious, and I don't know if you can divulge that, but you know, with the initiation process, is it something that you tell me so that if it's private or whatever, you know, to the public? But is it something mm-hmm. that it leaves you out of your comfort zone, or does it expand you, or just say like, hey, can you walk across a log that's, you know, I'm making something up, but hey, can you walk across a log that's 40 foot high from the river kind of thing? Or is it, you know, what's the involvement when you said it really expands you and things?
Well, have you ever read about the traditional shaman rituals of initiation where they bestow the power of different spirits upon you. And
no,
they're really
lengthy.
Well, they're like these shamanic lines that go back really far, like South American shamanism. They, like you said, walk across this log 40 feet high. It's similar in a way to that, but it's a ritual that everyone goes through. And it's not so much walk across a log 40 foot high, but it does put you out of your comfort zone, and it is expansive. So it's a little bit of all of what you said. But the main things, to simplify it, is you're brought into the circle. You're purified, and your old life is kind of washed away from you, and you get to start anew, and then you're born again as a witch. And that aspect of it is very, very beautiful, but it's also thrilling. Like when I was initiated, I went in, my legs were shaking, partially because the house was cold, partially because I was nervous, but it goes from thrilling and scary, and I was smiling the whole time because it was mischievous and like dark, and I like that kind of thing. But then you kind of have the blindfold removed from your eyes, and you get to see the light that witchcraft has. And instantly, as soon as I was in that circle, I just had this feeling wash over me where I just thought, this is ancient. This is something ancient, something very old. And these gods are very, very old. So it's very, very powerful. It is expansive. I think the word you used was expansive, and I think that's the best way to sum it up. It's an expansive experience.
Did you stub your toe?
Actually, kind of. Kind of. When I was being led across the house, I knocked my shoulder into two door frames. I have very wide shoulders, and they just bumped into it. But if I was being initiated outdoors, I would probably, like, fall off a cliff or something. Just to add some mischief to it with my
I don't know if I would do that. I have a problem with heights, and I have a problem with water. So what about you, Jason?
I am an oversized ogre that has no fine motor skills or anything, and I break everything I touch. So, but I did have a question for you. So there's obviously schools of witchcraft out there that are probably bad. I imagine that there are people out there, like you're saying, with what you do, you improve the world and stuff like that. I imagine there's got to be the polar opposite out there where people are trying to hurt others. So my question to you is, does that really exist out there? And if people are doing that sort of thing, there has to be some sort of consequence to it, because there has to be some sort of, I don't know, karma or something. So do those kind of things exist out there where people are doing that?
There definitely have been people who have some psychological issues and have tried to use the craft as an excuse for some type of corrupt activities. But if you think about that in proportion to the Catholic Church, I mean, witchcraft has nothing on the Catholic Church in terms of corruption inside that people have utilized it for. People say in every religion there's some bad people, but I don't think that's the right thing to say. I think it's in any group of people there's some bad people. But the thing is, everyone in the craft, we hold our teacups very high and we sit up very straight. And if someone is doing something that they shouldn't be, just like that, they're gone. And we know how to keep everyone in check and keep bad things from happening. But it's not a very big problem because of that, because most people, if they want to do some evil cult-ish activities, they'll just form their own thing. Why would they concern themselves with hundreds and thousands of priesthood across the world that will keep them in check, you know?
Right.
But that's part of the reason why I wrote my book, Presidium, because there were people who were getting scorned and cursed by these bad magicians. And most of the time, actually, they weren't even witches. They were just ceremonial magicians who had a chip on their shoulder and they wanted to take it out on someone. And in my book, Presidium, the first chapter is this story of someone who makes someone angry at the grocery store. Basically, they mess up and make someone angry, and that person goes home and sends a curse at them. And typically, the thing is, most people are, when they first get into witchcraft, they're like, oh no, what if someone curses me? What if someone doesn't like me and sends a curse? Some of the most, the people with the most haters in witchcraft are typically the most successful, because the amount of hateful energy that people try to send out, it's usually very weak. I mean, if you're someone who is so hateful to your fellow, you probably don't have a lot of spiritual wisdom or spiritual strength, and you're probably not going to cause very strong results. I know I'm probably in several people's curse jars, and it's not affecting me at all. So
I've always
you can
been
be afraid
kind
of it, but I'm in the public eye, and people can send me curses all they want. They don't have as much strength as the beautiful and strong witches that I have on my side.
So how does somebody know if they are cursed? Like, is there any kind of sign? Like, I mean, sometimes, you know, everybody has bad luck. It's just part of life. But how do you know when mm-hmm. bad luck is actually somebody has casted some sort of hex or curse on you? Is there any way to know that?
Yeah, there are some telltale signs, and it's kind of like a little checklist that you go down. And I have that more elaborated in my book. But the main thing is, if you're having a bad luck, if you're having a day of bad luck and you are just thinking, wow, this day really sucks. If you think about it in quantum physics terms, you saying that your day sucks, it's just going to make your day suck even more. And if you say, wow, this week has really sucked, you're probably going to attract a bad week. And if you say, my life really sucks, your life is probably going to suck more. And I see a lot of people come to me and they have just terrible bad luck all the time and terrible lives. And I'll go into some meditation, or I'll use my psychic abilities, and I'll try to see what's kind of going on there. And probably 75% of the time, these people have just got themselves in this muck, and they've just walked into this swamp and kind of just got stuck there. But there are those cases, and I stand by this, where someone actually has some type of magical hindrance on them. And in my book, I explain, the first thing to do is to not be paranoid, to take a deep breath and realize that you can kind of control this. If it's some type of negative energy, the only thing that it comes down to is your energy versus the negative energy. And typically, if it's your own energy versus an energy that you don't want, you can overpower it, especially if it's something that someone sent. Like if someone spent an afternoon sending a curse to you, they've probably sent probably an hour's worth of their personal energy, right? If you work for 2 hours, you've already doubled down on that. And if you work for a whole day, you've just blown it out of the water compared to the amount of energy that's going back and forth. So you go down this checklist, you say, my life is really sucking, I'm having nightmares, I'm having physical problems, I'm irritable all the time, it feels like something is watching me. I'm having bad nightmares where people are sending curses to me in my dreams. Some type of shadow figure has shown up, all of these scary paranormal experiences. It's easy to get swept up in it, right? So many people have this happen and they just go head over heels into fear. But one of the first things I say in Presidium is don't get swept up in fear. Just start working and you can get rid of it. So I utilized a lot of very old methods of getting rid of these negative energies and getting rid of curses, methods that have been used for hundreds of years with success. So basically there's always a way. It's just energy against energy. There's always a way to overcome it.
If it doesn't, if you don't allow it to affect you, it's not going to affect you, correct?
Yeah. I mean, like if someone offers you a cup of poison and you say, wow, I'm really thirsty, I want this, and you drink it, That's accepting that negative energy. And that's what you do when you go into full-on panic mode. You're saying, oh, no, I'm cursed. All this negative energy is being thrown at me. Then you're just kind of accepting it and sitting with it. If you say, okay, something is going on, I don't want this, and I'm going to get rid of it, then you're saying to that cup of poison, no, thank you. Go away. And it's energy against energy, and it's psychology, and it's mind against mind, and mind over matter. So if anyone ever curses you, my best advice is to be laugh it off and say, let them do what they want. And then either pray or listen to positive music, use whatever type of cleansing you like, take a spiritual bath, whatever. If you shrug it off, they can throw that curse at you as hard as they want, and they're just going to waste their energy. Shrug it off.
And what you're doing sometimes is just giving them more power. You know, it's all vibration. It's very difficult because these people are so annoying or toxic. But, you know, I think that we can, as human beings and evolving, trying to evolve spiritually, we can be aware of them. And number one, try and avoid situations, try avoid people, create a shield of protection, you know, whatever, like you said, whether you pray about it or you chant about it or something, and just deflect it, you know, because I know that when I go into public places, I don't want people to read me, you know, I don't read people. Mm-hmm. I think that's just, to me, personally, it's an invasion of privacy. When I'm ready to work, I'll open up my sixth and seventh sense and open up the floodgate. But to me, I think that, you know, I just like to go around and be as pleasant and, you know, be helpful. But I just try and avoid toxic people. I can see them a mile long. You can see them. You just know. So
that's a good skill to have.
I say that again?
That's a good skill to have, being able to spot them far away.
Oh, yeah. When I do shows, I already have a shield. They're not going to read me. They can't see. They don't, so... But, it's a good way to describe, and curses are real. I mean, it could be just, you know, intentional or unintentional. It could be generational. We don't know about these things, you know, but the best thing you can do is make the best of it. And like you said, it's a very big, very good advice is to don't let it affect you. Don't feed that energy. Absolutely.
Yeah, don't feed it. So many people do feed it.
That's awesome. Very good.
Many people wake up every day and they're like, this curse really sucks. And every single waking moment of their day, they're just feeding that curse and making it worse and worse. It's not smart.
Right. And sometimes even you see it in families, you know, patterns like that.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Myself, I stay away. I don't mean to be that way, but if I see an indication of that, I stay away and, you know, do what I can to just get away from that toxic energy, that negative energy.
And it's quite sad when people are so swept up in these things. And that's why I felt it was important to write my book. So many people haven't written books specifically about getting rid of a curse. And I was like, I've been helping people with this for a few years, and I've seen the main things, and I've gained a lot of spiritual wisdom from my magical practices and my magical skills. And I looked back at the old books that mentioned it and mentioned how to deal with it. And I basically summed it all up. And I was like, this is what people have always done. This is what you can do too. And so far, the people who have used my book and had a curse, it just works. It's like the common core of getting rid of a curse, of magical systems. It's very simple. And it's just what you need to do to get rid of these negative energies that can cloud your mind. A lot of it is psychological, really.
Can I ask you, do you guys use like incense or herbs? And if you do, can you share with our listeners what you guys use?
We typically use the classic British herbs, the sacred British herbs. Nicholas Culpepper, his manual, the English Physician, English Physician and Herbal by Nicholas Culpepper. He had all of the classic British herbs, their astrological uses, their medicinal uses, and that's a really good book to have.
Is it a combination, or is there a common one like frankincense and myrrh? What are the things that if a person can we use them for? Just to clear the air and just have just have a change of energy and things like that.
We don't use sage because we don't like to rip off Native American culture. We like them to be able to have their own thing, but we do use frankincense, which has been traded throughout the whole Western world and seen as a symbol of utmost purity and basically something that brings the vibrations to the level of the gods on high. So our classic incense is frankincense. We have a list of herbs that are sacred to us, but those are secret. But okay. You can basically look at all of the astrological correspondences and see what works from those old-timey books.
Do you use myrrh too?
Typically no, but we could. Just the basic one is frankincense. We could use myrrh. Sometimes I've burnt some incenses that have myrrh in it, but typically we use charcoal and resin for our incense. We don't use sticks or cones or anything. Very ceremonial.
Well, I personally like the resins. I love the smell of resins, and frankincense is just a wonderful, wonderful
it's
aroma.
Amazing.
I love it.
It's addicting, too.
Hey, Jason, have you used different essential oils or any kind of herbs other than maybe sage or anything like that?
Oh, back in the day, I was kind of dabbling in, I guess you could say, witchcraft. I mean, this was a long time ago, and I was young, and I had some books on earth magic and stuff like that. But no, I never really got into essential oils or anything like that. I'm to the point in my life now where I feel like dabbling in those sort of things, these esoteric and occult things, it kind of freaks me out. So I kind of don't want to mess with any of that. I mean, especially after, doing this show for quite some time, we hear about all the horror stories about ghost hunting and all that. And I'm just like, I'm fine with just doing the show and can leave the occult and let everybody else do it. I watch too many horror movies. That's probably my main problem.
I love horror movies, though, and it doesn't scare me. It must be your experience on the show and hearing all these horror stories. I've definitely heard my fair share of horror stories, but it's typically not from people who are actual initiates. It's from people who are dabbling as teenagers who are already dark people, and they just are finding a way to bring darkness into their life through spirituality. Either way, they'll find a way to bring darkness in. It has nothing to do with the spirituality.
Do you
it
guys
sounds like it's
dabble in the Ouija board? Quick question. Is that part of your thing? You do the Ouija board or not?
Witches, particularly?
Yes.
I have several Ouija boards, but I don't use them. Typically, we don't try to work with the dead. We're a fertility cult. We're a religion of life, and we celebrate life. And our kind of viewpoint is once someone has crossed over to the other side, they're on a new journey. And having people calling on them 24/7, calling them back to earth, is just disrupting their journey. So sometimes we'll invite spirits of our ancestors or spirits of witches who we had a connection with to talk with them, typically once a year at Halloween. It sounds real spooky, but it's there's actually some solid magical science behind it. And either they can show up or they don't have to show up. We typically don't use Ouija boards. Our religion goes back a lot longer than Ouija boards were around, so it's not part of our actual methods. But I really like the design of Ouija boards. I think that they're really iconic items of the past, so I collect them, but I typically don't use them.
So we do have a caller that's been on hold for quite some time. I don't know if they're just listening or have a question. Do you want to take a question, potential question from a caller?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I hope they're calling for me.
Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Do you have a question?
Oh, absolutely. How are we doing this evening?
Yeah,
hey, pretty good.
Paranormal Horizons. Yay.
fun. So I'm curious. I have never heard of, I believe you said Alexandria?
Alexandrian witchcraft.
Alexandrian witchcraft. And I've been listening the whole time. And I was just curious, like when you were saying you have your initiations and or a vetting process, and that you're mentioning a lot of a very broad spectrum of different things. Is there do you guys are you more holistic or do you use any type of mind or mood altering substances, say ayahuasca or mushrooms or any type of mind expanding experiences within your type of craft, or is it something that you don't discuss, or just curious?
Typically we have a glass of wine and everything spirals down from there. Many glasses of wine are refilled. But if you look back on it, think of the whole the Greco-Roman shamanic cults and the worship of the great god Pan and Dionysus. People would just fill glass and glass of wine. The god Pan would be invoked and he would be there, and just everything would just spiral into this just ecstatic experience. That's similar to what we do. It's not so much like a Native American peyote or a sweat lodge type of thing. It's filtered through a very British and English class system, just sipping the wine, and eventually it brings the magic circle into just this whole other realm. Especially if you have incense going and chanting and dancing, all of these things are things that bring us to this just ecstatic experience of true magic. It really gets the power going.
Is that what,
it's
like,
an amazing
what
experience.
Opens your third eye? I mean, is there like, you know, how you can actually partake or be part of something to where it expands your understanding to a whole nother realm, much like the first time you've taken lysergic sodium thalidomide or some type of DMT, and you're like, I would have never knew or understood this if I didn't allow this to happen at the right place at the right time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, for us, in our methods, our very traditional methods, we don't so much take a type of drug. And in fact, in Alexandrian witchcraft, we're very opposed to recreational drugs because we have so many traditional, very developed methods that we can use to kind of unlock our inner eye and bring about these mystical experiences. The thing is, it's not instant. You don't take a substance and it happens. It takes a lot of dedication, and it all happens within the mind. So it's not so much like taking a drug. It's a very hardcore experience that must be it must be taught and worked on before it happens. So it's a lot more work, but the result is pretty much the same, just this experience of something higher than you.
And I could appreciate that, but some would beg to differ or argue, much like shamans or other religions, dimethyltryptamine, they don't consider a drug. Dimethyltryptamine isn't everything. It's already part of you. It's part of the plant. It's part of the earth. It's part of everything. Just like the staunch herbalist would say the same about marijuana, but, you know, that's marijuana.
Yeah.
Which has been a lot more accepted since, you know, in the last 30, 40 years or whatever. But even so...
Well, I don't mean to downplay it or say that those are illegitimate. I just am saying that that's not particularly part of our methods.
I understand. It all starts with a glass of wine with you guys, and then it depends on who brings what, right?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
All
right.
Is awesome, a whole other thing.
No, that's awesome. Thank you. You answered my question. You have a great evening.
Oh, good. You too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling in. Now, I have a question for you. Now, you mentioned... This is kind of a little off the wall. So I'm adopted and I don't know my family history. And so I just did one of those DNA tests. I was thinking my whole life that it was that I had some Native American in me. Well, it came back as mostly, well, virtually all Northwestern European, British, and Irish and stuff like that. So my question is there any situation where in your past you had a relative that was a witch? Does anything carry down the lineage, like that would make someone, I don't know, genetically more predisposed to be, you know, adept at the magical arts?
It's a very interesting question because I've always wondered, people who have spiritual abilities and people who are drawn to spiritual practices, do they have something in them, whether that be a spirit that decides to guide them or decides to work with them and they're just kind of in the background through their whole life, or is it they were born with these certain characteristics? But typically, if that's true, I don't find that it relies on family. I think it relies on the individual. Many people have said, my grandma was a witch and she passed it down to me and there's witchcraft in my blood. I think that's just rubbish. Either you're a witch or you're not. And I can tell a witch from a non-witch, and I can tell a witch from a poser. And a lot of people who say that they're a witch because one of their family members were a witch, that's just their excuse. It's like saying, my grandma was a doctor, so I'm a doctor too. You can have that spark of magic in you, but unless you get the training, unless you go through all the work, and unless you dedicate your life to it, you're not going to have the power of the witch. And that's all it boils down to.
And that makes sense. And I'm looking at the time here, and we've got a few minutes left. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to for you to let listeners know where you can get where they can get your book. And is there a way to contact you or a website they could get more information?
Yeah. Check out austinshippey.com. It's S-H-I-P-P-E-Y. Austinshippey.com is my website, and there's all information about me, blog posts about me, and you can buy my book there, Presidium. And it's Presidium, A Handbook of Magical Defense and Protection. And I have some information about Alexandrian witchcraft on there too. And also if you go on YouTube and type in Austin Shippey, I have tons of videos talking about witchcraft where you can learn more.
Very cool. And I had another question for you. So love spells, do they exist and do they work?
Well, I think that they do exist and they do work, but often not in the way that you want them to work. I think falling in love is its own magic in its own way. It doesn't need a spell to happen. It's already magical enough.
Yeah, because I've heard that, like, when you start messing with stuff like that, when you start doing magic to change the free will of others, it turns into, like, a bad thing.
that allowed a lot of script writers to make some interesting episodes and movies. But in reality, people try to mess with people's free will, and people just say, no, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in your curse. I'm not interested in your love spell. And nothing happens. And usually the gods will say, stop this. It's silly. You're making yourself look like a fool, and nothing will happen. Usually they'll learn a lesson. People typically know, like, what is the highest form of magic? What is good for the world? What is good for you? And if they go against that and they make these silly mistakes, they typically just learn a lesson and get over it. It typically doesn't happen like in the movies where everyone's lives go down the drain. It's just the gods give you a slap on the wrist and they're like, okay, go on. Learn the next lesson.
Awesome.
So
Austin, awesome. I want to say,
before we run out of time, is there anything we can do on a daily basis as lay people or people that are not in the sect or whatever you would call that in your priesthood? Is there something a person can do every day to help themselves or, you know, bring the vibration or, you know, just kind of preparing them for if they decide to go and pursue, you know, your priest, you know, your group or whatever you call that, the coven, I mean.
You mean what lay people can do or what people who are seeking can do?
What people that are seeking can do.
Basically, all you have to do is talk to someone. Find a priest. You can go on any of the Facebook pages, British traditional witchcraft, Alexandrian witchcraft, Gardnerian witchcraft, whatever interests you, go on one of those Facebook pages, say you're interested, talk to someone, and if it's right, it will happen. If it's not right, it won't happen. That's all you have to do. Just make those few steps and you'll be on your way.
Awesome. Well, hey, we have a couple minutes left. We have another caller. Would you want to take one quick question from another caller before we close the show?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Sure. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Hi, this is Nicole.
Hi, Nicole.
Hey, Nicole.
Welcome to Paranormal Horizons.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. Okay, so my question. I have recently found that I have some respiratory issues that have, they've kind of inhibited me when I'm trying to raise, like, energy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, say, when I'm trying to, you know, burn incense and, and I'll be trying to raise energy, it's like I won't be able to do that without feeling like I'm going to pass out at any second. So what would you say could
help? Well, if you do pass out, your soul might just fly out of your body and you can have an amazing astral experience. Or you might die. Either one. You could die or have an amazing astral experience. But
Either one could be fun.
One of the most famous witches in the British line is Gerald Gardner, and he had very bad asthma, and he was very old when he started. And I believe Alexander's, the founder of Alexandrian witchcraft, had asthma as well. And I had asthma when I was a kid, and sometimes it acts up. Sometimes it really affects me. But I think that it's kind of like all the mythologies say, like the great gods and demigods who had the ability to travel to the underworld had a gimp in one leg or were crippled in one foot. I feel like it's kind of a trait of a witch. It's kind of like a third nipple of witchcraft that you have asthma. If you can find a way to tame it, like with like using an inhaler or a more like a steroid inhaler, then that could be very good. But if it's really a bad problem and you can't tame it with an inhaler, I mean, it's okay to feel faint. I would say follow your passions. Try to keep it under control. If you can't, there's many other ways that you can raise that power and you can make that magic work. I'd be very sad if I couldn't do some things like incense. I love incense so much. If my asthma really acted up when I burned incense, I would be quite sad, but there are many other ways that you can make it work.
Yeah, it makes me so upset because it smells so good, and I'm like, this is a great time, but then I just can't breathe.
What about essential oils?
True. Okay, I really want to get an essential oil diffuser because I think that might actually work.
It's not as fun, though.
Yeah, it's a little...
It doesn't have fire involved.
Yeah, and it's a machine, so it's kind of like... I feel like I'm doing it the Tumblr route when I'm doing it that way, but I might have to.
But have you tried using an inhaler?
I did a while back, but I'm thinking I might give it another try.
You should give it another try.
I'll try sometimes.
I need to use an inhaler too, but I am still able to burn incense and survive. If my asthma acts up, I just take a puff on the inhaler and it's perfectly fine. It could be the same for you. It's worth a try.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that because I want to burn things.
Is there something in the psychic medium?
What was that?
Oh, I was going to suggest, can I suggest something for her as a psychic medium?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I would like to see if you could maybe build a little bit of cardio in your body, you know. I'm just suggesting, you know, doing some walking, you know, just walk and strengthen your, your heart and your lungs, okay? And these are very practical things. You're not going to have to do drugs or anything like that. But they just start out with the respiratory system. I can see that, I mean, psychically I could feel that, you know, your throat is, you have some difficulty in your throat. Your throat is dry and sometimes you're not able to speak, communicate. Is that correct? Communicate
no.
What you want to say, you know, speak your mind, things like that. And also it feels like the heart and the lung area is a little bit on the congested side. So that's why I'm suggesting to, you know, like you can try inhalers, but also you can try and build your system up, your immune system. In Chinese medicine, it feels like
as a
medical intuitive, your immune system, you're very depleted, where you could use more energy.
Sherry is a medical healer, so she knows a lot about the spiritual side of physical ailments.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, because my family actually has a very long history of heart issues.
Okay. Because that's what I thought. What I like to be making a suggestion is to build your system up so that you can, you know, overcome having shortness of breath and everything. I don't want to see you when you're 50 years old and you end up having COPD or any problems like that, and hopefully you don't smoke. So, that's going to compound the problem. But, you know, you do a little bit, you know, a little bit on the weakened immune system and just boost yourself, having some, you know, give you a little bit to do yoga, get the heart pumping, get the lungs expanding. That would be very helpful. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate you guys.
All right. Well, we got to wrap it up. We're a couple minutes over, so I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks, Austin, for sharing all your knowledge with us this evening, and hopefully maybe down the road we can get you back on the show. We can talk about it a little more.
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you, Sherry and Jason, for having me on.
It just gives us a more expanding viewpoint of other things that most people are not aware of. You know, we don't, like Jason and I were talking before the show, we're not all about UFOs and paranormal. We like to expand and go into the spirituality, go where no man has dealt his feet, so we can expand our knowledge and learning and things like that. That's what we're all about.
Awesome. Yeah, that's amazing.
And we'd love to have you back, Austin. You're a beautiful soul. Thank you so much for your time. Jason and I really appreciate you. And, it's really good. Thank you.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. You're flattering me a bit. Thank you for having me on.
We just appreciate each and every guest is unique, and that's what we do. You guys are the meat, you know. We're Jason and I are behind the scenes, but it's our guests and our listeners that keep the show a success. And Jason was saying that if you go under Blog Talk, we're the second search engine out of how many thousands? We're in the number two slot,
oh,
Jason.
Awesome.
So,
out of
318,000. You know, being on FM station, you know, we've had, you know, a lot of exposure, and it's just great. So it's just, if it wasn't for, you know, our guests and our listeners, we wouldn't be successful as we are. So thank you again.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
All right, quickly, next week we're going to have Eric Mitchell. We may have an abductee, a UFO abductee. His name is David Trustee. And so Eric Mitchell is coming back. We may be talking about UFO, we may be talking about abductions, we may talk about both, I don't know, but it's always going to be a great show, folks, especially with having Eric back and having a new guest with him. So I think we're going to be all four of us on the show, we can make it happen.
And we got some big stuff in the works with us potentially doing a UFO abductee roundtable with some of the biggest names out there, so we are trying to develop
That's in the works right now. So big names in the UFO arena, and very Gaunt is is named president of MUFON in Kentucky. So, you know, he follows that and is just big, you know, really good about that. And we're just really happy to have a big round table. We may have to go a little bit, we may have to go half an hour. We've been talking behind the scenes, and we may have to go an extra half an hour because we may have a big round table.
Yeah.
Surprise you, Jason. Just to say, hey, this is going to be a big one. We're going to have a lot of good people out there. And Travis Walton's is in the works, too. So, yep.
Absolutely. All right.
Okay,
well,
take care. So,
hope everybody has a great week, and we'll be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time. Hey, check out the Facebook page. Oh, and also I'm starting to actually open the chat window for the shows now. I normally didn't do it, but I'm getting in the habit of it. I saw a few people in there. So if anybody listens to us in the future, check the chat screen if you're on your computer, and you can present questions that way. Also, check out the Facebook page, Paranormal Horizons, on Facebook. I've been kind of goofy. I have the virtual reality set up with the Oculus Rift, and I get these scary games, and while they don't really scare me, it's amusing to watch. So I've posted a couple of videos up there of me playing virtual reality paranormal, which is awesome. So anyways, hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see you next Sunday. Good night, everyone.
Take care. Thank you, everybody. Peace.